MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
We now speak to Sean Neatling about Naspa. Sean, good morning.
Hi, I'm Wynn, PFA.
Thank you for joining us.
No, thanks for having me on.
I think we've got a tough topic, man. We, you know, originally we sort of wanted to chat around what's been behind the sell-off of Naspers. You know, how does a lot of this sort of broader Chinese regulation impact the company? I mean, there's a lot to talk about. Naspers was once the darling of the stock exchange, and it's been under a huge amount of pressure since. So, I mean, what do you have for us? What do you think is really sort of going on here?
Sure. Look, I think it's really difficult to have a conversation with, about Naspers without talking about Tencent, which is then difficult to talk about without talking about China and big tech in particular. So trying to, you know, disentangle and trying to unravel those pieces are not especially simple. But I think there's a bit of things, I think, obviously on the fundamental side, which are relatively well known to investors. So I think, you know, if you look at the fundamentals of Naspers, you know, investors have cited the large discount in NAV for the longest time. Management's been unable to unlock that discount regardless of, you know, how they've tried to do so over the past few years. And then obviously the way that most investors access Tencent, or South African investors access Tencent is through Naspers and through the VIE structure, which is in itself like relatively contentious. So I think if you then turn over and you look at Tencent, Tencent has come under increased pressure, you know, from the Chinese regulator. WeChat and WeChat Pay in particular is an incredibly strong platform, which, you know, works across both retail and corporate businesses in China. It's got over a billion users on a monthly basis. So really strong network effects and really, really incredible sort of platform that's used in China. And that's recently come under some scrutiny, you know, just in terms of how private information is treated and the regulators started clamping down there. And then if you look at big tech in aggregate, on the Hang Seng sort of indices, and you look at sort of Meituan and you look at Alibaba and Tencent as well, you know, there's been increased pressure there from regulators as well, both in China and in the US. So it's a particularly difficult puzzle to sort of disentangle. But that, I suppose, in a nutshell, is what's at play at the moment.
I mean, is this still one of the stocks that we have to? I mean, most portfolio managers, almost everybody, you have to own Naspers, right? I mean, is this still the case? Is there still a really strong case to be made for it has to be almost the cornerstone of your portfolio? Because if you think about how it's been downweighted in the index, and you think about the challenges that it's facing, you know, is there like a recovery story here, or do we wait for lower prices?
Yeah, I think if you look at historically, I think most fund managers in South Africa, particularly that the ones that were sort of, I suppose, more benchmark cognizant, would have had some exposure to Naspers because it held a fairly sizable position in the SWIX. I think it was 25% at one stage. It's obviously somewhat, you know, less meaningful today, but I do think it forms a part of most fund managers' profiles. Funds. I think, you know, if you look at more benchmark agnostic managers or value managers in particular, they've avoided the stock for the longest time. So I think, you know, 90% of South African managers would have had some exposure to Naspers and Prosus. But I also think it's at a point now where, you know, a lot of managers are starting to look at it because, you know, those fundamentals are starting to look especially attractive if you just sort of strip out, I suppose, the valuation part. But it's probably overly simplistic just to look at Naspers on valuation and just from a statistically cheap perspective without looking at sort of the regulatory risk and all of the, let's call it, known unknowns, which are quite prominent at this point. So to answer your question, I don't think people are or investors are forced buyers of Naspers by any means at this point in time. And I do think what you're seeing is fund managers being somewhat more discerning just given, you know, the fact that management's been unable to unlock that discount, and especially the China risk at this point in time, you know, you can probably expect that to get a bit more challenging before it starts easing. So I think that's where fund managers are looking.
So the darkness, or the it's going to get darker before the dawn kind of thing, or the storm is going to get a bit worse before it calms
down. Yeah, I think Peter, the way that we've looked at it is that the distribution of potential outcomes at this point in time are particularly wide. You know, so the way we've thought about it from a fine construction perspective is that we have some exposure, but at this point in time, you know, we're not meaningfully adding to that. And I think that's where we really are in the way that we've sized and thought about the opportunity.
So then if you want, you might still want to, lately it's been really tough being in sort of the tech space and whatever, right? I mean, we've seen that sort of deflation of that bubble, if you will, starting to happen over some, it's been some time now. I mean, if you look at the way that some of these companies have traded, you can say that, you know, that overvaluation is starting to deflate a little bit, right? So if you do want access to sort of tech, particularly Chinese tech, and you don't necessarily want to take the Naspersal process, path, what other options are available to us?
Chinese tech in particular?
Or just sort of, let's say, tech in general, because I know Chinese tech, you can go and buy a Chinese tech CQQQ, that ETF is great, right? But, sure. In terms of sort of single company options, is there anything else that's on your radar that might be, worth looking at?
Sure. Look, so Peter, the way that we invest, we've obviously got a global opportunity set. So what we'll do is we'll look at, different parts of the market, which I suppose where investors have baked too much good or bad news into prices. So tech is not something which at this stage is particularly appealing to us. China does stand out specifically because, valuations have come in over the last 12 months or so. And that really started with sort of edtech regulation towards the end of last year. And then we also look at U.S. tech, because, again, like you mentioned, Naspers has been part of most South African investors' portfolio. It's been very difficult to be a global investor without having some exposure to U.S. and U.S. tech in particular.
But Apple, tech as FANGs, a, that sort correct, of, correct. Yeah.
And we've seen sort of, some of the earnings coming for companies like Netflix recently. Missing numbers and subscriber growth being under pressure. And then also announcing some changes or potential changes to the way that they do business. So the economics of those businesses don't nearly look as attractive as what has been priced in previously. But I suppose to answer your question, there are no, let's call it, standout names for us at this point in time in the tech space. We've largely been overweight sectors like energy and financials. We just found better value there. So I think, we typically move to those parts of the market that are somewhat, let's call it, less frothy than I suppose tech. But China does stand out at this point in time, and it is part of our conversations, particularly because, prices have come off. And potentially there's been things that have run a bit ahead of themselves there in terms of what investors are expecting.
So maybe a time to start sort of nibbling at Chinese tech, but not yet the time to jump into the swimming pool. It's probably wise, to tell you the truth, to think that, this conflict between Russia and Ukraine, I know that it's not the cause of inflation. It has absolutely contributed to it, but if it continues to escalate, there might be, it might continue to be, a lot more volatile, and we don't really know how the market's going to react. So you don't actually want to be taking too much sort of equity risk at this point, I don't think. At least that's my two cents. I don't know if you agree with that sentiment.
Yeah, sure. So, I mentioned a relatively wide distribution of potential outcomes, in terms of how this scenario can play out. So geopolitical risk is certainly one thing, and there's a few issues which are tied into that. It's obviously China being fairly closely aligned with Russia to a certain extent. But then, you're looking at potential sanctions from that. There's also the Taiwan issue, which has been in the background. So geopolitical risk is quite, again, difficult to disentangle and pinpoint. And then, like I mentioned, the other risks that you were throwing there are pretty much your antitrust regulations, which are ongoing. There's pretty much data security issues. And looking at how private information is treated in China, the VIEs have been problematic for most investors for some time, or less understandable than what they should be. So there's a few of these issues at play, and I think since the start of the year, geopolitical risk has become more prominent. I would agree with that.
Okay, well, cool. Thank you very much for chatting with us this morning. Unfortunately, That's all the time we have. I hope you have a great day. Thank you for joining us so early.
The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.